From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest is Doug Appling, better known as Emancipator. On this week's episode, we'll get to see the man behind the mystery. Bursting onto the scene as a teenager with his self-produced album, Soon It Will Be Cold Enough, Emancipator has been spreading his down and mid-tempo tunes featuring dark strings, moody guitar, and whip-smart hip-hop beats on late-night festival stages across the country. 2010's follow-up, Safe in the Steep Cliffs, was a critical success, garnering a spot on several Best of the Year lists. As a multi-instrumentalist, Appling has been pushing the envelope for all artists who strive to meld the organic with the synthetic, on stage and in the studio. The Big Emancipator Blockhead Tour kicks off in a week. Let's get to the interview. You're a bit of a mystery, even to your fans, so I'd like to dig into your musical background, because I know you're a multi-instrumentalist. When did you first pick up an instrument, and what was it?
My first instrument was the violin, and I was 4 years old. I took lessons for 8 years, and I also played around with dulcimers growing up. My dad used to have them around the house, piano as well. And then later on, when I was 12, I started playing drums, guitar, bass. A couple years after that, I got into electronic music production and software side of things, and that's my background.
I wonder, since you had all those instruments lying around the house, and your dad was obviously a big musical enthusiast, did you sort of take on his musical taste? What were you listening to as a kid?
I guess I was listening to what he was listening to. So yes, I definitely, there's a direct influence there. I mean, I had to listen to a lot of classical music just to take violin lessons.
Sure.
And a lot of folk music, guitar-based stuff, world music, as well as electronic music. You know, my dad was listening all throughout, ever since it came around, and then all throughout the 90s, I was listening to the dance music he was.
So you were interested in this early sort of electronic music. How did you make the leap to actually producing it yourself?
So when I first started using Acid Pro software in high school, and I was really able to combine any sounds I wanted into to create the beats I was hearing in my head, that was kind of the breakthrough. And when I first started, I was experimenting with all sorts of electronic music styles, a lot of dance music, faster stuff, before I arrived at this mid-tempo, down-tempo sound of Emancipator.
Were you maybe trying to emulate any particular artists, or you just had all these influences that you had been carrying with you since childhood, and it was just sort of this amalgamation of all these sounds that created the beats you were hearing in your head?
Sure, I think the influences I grew up with were there on a very fundamental level. But right around the time I started making beats, I was listening to songs like Midnight in a Perfect World by DJ Shadow, and I was listening to a lot of Thievery Corporation, and that's what was really inspiring to me at the same time I started making music, and I wanted to make beats like those.
Everything that's everything alive grows alive, you see. You know, the little tomato seeds you and Nancy find in your garden, how they grow into nice red tomatoes.
First Snow from Emancipator's debut album, Soon It Will Be Cold Enough. So tell me how your first record was picked up by a Japanese label. It seems like a really interesting story.
Yeah, actually, my only presence was on MySpace. So out of the blue one day, I got a message on MySpace from a Japanese label expressing interest, asked if I had a record label. So I responded that I didn't, and we went from there. That was actually a label owned by one of the people who works for Hideout Productions. Eventually, Nujabes caught on. He heard my album, and he wanted to release it on Hideout Productions. So, yeah, it was easy as that.
Was there any particular reason, do you think, that maybe these Japanese labels or the Japanese public as a whole was particularly interested in your sound?
I really didn't know too much about the Japanese instrumental music scene until I got involved, although I had just started listening to Nujabes shortly before I was contacted by him. So that was a coincidence. I think my music has a bit of a jazzy side to it at times, and they're definitely into that when combined with hip-hop beats.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand completely what you're saying about your music definitely having strong jazz undertones. Were there any sort of indications that your music was out there and on the market before, or did you just throw it up on MySpace and suddenly you were attracting fans and all sorts of interest from people that you weren't even aware of?
Well, I was aware that it was building gradually around the world, actually, too. I would send out CDs that I burned myself, and I took orders through MySpace, and I would send them to different countries around the world sometimes. So I knew there's listeners out there, but it was really a welcome surprise when I found out there was this many listeners in Japan, enough for me to sell records and actually be able to go over there for the first time.
That's amazing. And then how did you end up on 1320 Records, a huge label, STS9's label?
That came about after I made the move to the West Coast, from Virginia to Portland, Oregon, and just started getting involved in the music scene out here. And it happened pretty quickly. It's awesome. It's been great so far.
Drawn from Soon It Will Be Cold Enough. Let's get back to the interview with Emancipator right here on the UNS podcast. Now, I gotta ask, I don't know what it is, and you're not even really from Portland originally, but I wonder what it is with the Pacific Northwest. I've heard it with Future Primitive and Kilowatts, such moody, brooding instrumentals and a dark vibe. Is it the lack of sunlight? Is it the constant rain? What's going on up there?
I don't know. It's just it's a really chill, laid back space to live in. And for me, just kind of lets me concentrate on the music. I was kind of attracted to the Pacific Northwest. It does have these kind of romantic qualities about it, you know, the Oregon Trail sort of thing, and kind of has something to do with my second album, Safe in the Steep Cliffs. I was kind of forming that around the same time I was plotting this move up to the steep cliffs of the Pacific Northwest.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Your latest release, Safe in the Steep Cliffs, I wonder what sort of musical evolution charts the course between your first record, Soon It Will Be Cold Enough, and where you are now. What sort of changes and evolutions were taking place in both your sound and the message you were trying to convey with your music?
Well, I think that the second album, Safe in the Steep Cliffs, I was more concentrated on, you know, crafting the sounds and textures. I think it's a little bit more intricate than the first album. I think that it's more layers. It's a lot more dense. And the mood is probably a little bit darker. I think so.
Did you have a sort of vision of the album as a whole, or as you were compiling tracks, it was sort of just a compilation of the best tracks as you felt it? Or is there some sort of maybe connective thread throughout the entire album?
It's a compilation of the best tracks that I've made in this style over the past few years. Been working on a lot of different tracks and sort of accumulating them into their own projects, you know, over the last couple of years. And Safe in the Steep Cliffs is just a style that I was working on very intensely. And, you know, I just had enough material to make this my second album.
Title track from Emancipator's sophomore release, Safe in the Steep Cliffs. Since you play so many instruments, I wonder when you've got a beat running through your head or a little trickle of a melody, what do you reach for? Do you pick up a guitar, pick up a mandolin, go over to a piano and knock out some keys, pick up a bass, you know, sit down at the drums? So where do you tend to go to first? Or is it just dependent upon what it is that's running through your head?
Well, I like to play by ear, you know, whatever sound that I first start with, whatever that may be, it seems like the next sound that needs to be added is just the idea comes naturally. And I just go towards that. When starting out a song, I think piano or keys are always a great way to start, just to get some chords or some melodies out, or guitar as well. And then from there, you can craft drum beats or flesh it out with the bass line. I usually start somewhere in the middle range, the mid-frequencies instruments when I start a song, or just play around with a sound or a sample until the next idea comes to me.
Now, are you the sort of producer that will sit and agonize over a particular track until it's perfect, days, weeks, months, or does an idea have to strike you in the morning and it's done by sunset and you know, you never go back to it again?
I'm definitely the kind of producer that lets my songs digest or distill for over several work sessions. There's definitely an initial creative flurry in which the bulk of the work is done, but then over time, I like to, you know, build a relationship with the track, try different things out. It takes me a while before I call a song finished.
Okay. I can certainly hear that in your sound. Let's talk about your live show. I've seen you a couple times now, but it's almost impossible to know what's going on. It's like watching an octopus. You're moving all around, grabbing this and that, twiddling these knobs and flicking those switches. Can you sort of break down what it is you're doing on stage, or does it even change from night to night?
Yeah, I use Korg pad control, MIDI controller to trigger samples and various effects. And the nano control is what I use mostly for different effects, and has, you know, 8 faders for whatever I've assigned those to. And live guitar. Lately, I've been bringing out my violinist Ilya on the road with me. And yeah, it's kind of somewhere in between live PA and, well, it is a live PA of some kind on the spectrum of things.
Do you feel like you've been adding more instruments to your live production and making it more about a live organic sound? Or have you gone in the opposite direction? You started with a bunch of gizmos and instruments on stage, and you try to sort of pare it down so that you've got a sort of simple and elegant approach.
I think that I kind of have the my setup right now is kind of based on what I'm able to travel with and control at the same time. So it's definitely good to keep it simple, although I do have bigger plans for my live shows in the future. I want to kind of get it a little bit more complicated and get more live instruments involved.
Siren from Emancipator's album Safe in the Steep Cliffs. Let's wrap up the interview. You've toured with huge, high-energy acts. I'm thinking of, in particular, I caught you playing with Bass Nectar. Do you feel like you have to adapt your sound when you're playing with someone as drastically removed from your own signature style? Or is it always going to be, this is the Emancipator sound, and this is the sort of vibe, regardless of who else is on the bill or what sort of crowd it is?
No, the context is definitely a factor. It's definitely something to think about. But on the other hand, I don't want to compromise the quality of the tracks I'm playing just because I feel like I have to play something up-tempo. So I'll try to choose, you know, my favorite tracks that are on the dancier side of things when I'm in those environments. But yeah, it will change time to time. It'll be different if you see me opening for Bass Nectar than I'm doing like a 4 a.m. late night set at a festival.
You're about to embark on a major tour with Blockhead. How do you feel your styles and approach complement each other? Blockhead obviously has a lot more hip hop, but also incorporates those jazz elements that are also very present in your own sound.
I'm really excited about this pairing with Blockhead. It's going to be a really good vibe on the whole tour. And yeah, I'm just starting to think about what kind of music I want to be playing at these shows, because it's going to be a good opportunity to create a really special evening.
So what's next for you? After this tour, are you just going to be gearing up for festival season, which is sure to be huge again for you this year? Or are you back in the studio trying to either push out an EP or a full length, or, you know, remixes or collaborations? What is on your table?
Oh, there are plenty of projects on my table right now in the studio that I'm excited to spend some time on. I'm definitely working on the next Emancipator albums, just a variety of songs that I've been working on, as well as producing a full-length rap album for Seattle rapper Sadistic, who I've worked with. We are finishing up an album that should be out sometime this year. And yeah, I just want to keep writing new songs as much as possible. The studio has a lot going on right now.
That's awesome. Doug Appling, Emancipator, thanks so much for being on the UNS podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's UNS podcast. Special thanks go to Ian Bryan, Chris Richards, and Keith Winter with Autonomous Music. And of course, my guest, Doug Appling. The Big Emancipator Blockhead Tour kicks off a week from today in Connecticut and will make its way down the Atlantic seaboard. Check theUNS.com for more dates. Coming up next week on the UNS podcast, we'll have special guest Freak Nasty. This drum and bass vanguard has worked with some of the biggest acts in electronic music and spends a huge amount of his time pushing for social change and human rights with his website giveback.net. His latest release, Dread at the Controls, comes out January 26th on Moody Music. Remember to visit theUNS.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. There are also some great contests at theUNS.com. You could win tickets to see Emancipator and Blockhead, Kilowatts and Blue Tech, Ott and Future Primitive, or an autographed CD from Grammy-nominated BT. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, contact me at anand@theunts.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theunts.com. Catch you next week.